How does it feel to have established a role in a popular television series, then to have your character die, suddenly and shockingly, as your exit from the show? Baltimore-born actor Josh Charles found out this week after the violent demise of his character in The Good Wife on CBS. Fan reaction has been intense, Charles told the Baltimore Sun's media critic David Zerwick. David joins us today to talk about the dramatic turn in The Good Wife and in Josh Charles' career. Plus, the expansion of Maryland-based Sinclair Broadcasting, CNN's wall-to-wall coverage of Malaysian Airlines Flight 370, and the future of House of Cards as a Maryland production. Midday on Media with David Zerwick, after the news from NPR. And welcome back. It's the second hour of Midday. Dan Rodrigues here. Time for Midday on Media with my pal from the Baltimore Sun, David Zerwick, the media critic and blogger of Z on TV. Hello, Z.
Hey, Dan.
How you feeling?
Good. I'm feeling
good.
Great.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, thanks.
Fans of CBS's The Good Wife were legitimately shocked Sunday night as Will, one of the show's central characters portrayed by Baltimore-born actor Josh Charles, was unexpectedly killed off. Social media exploded with excitement, proving that the network and the show's production staff expertly executed a real surprise for CBS viewers, which has been made a difficult thing to do, to pull off a surprise with a 24-hour news cycle. We're going to be talking about that today. And speaking of the 24-hour news cycle, CNN has come under fire, not only for going nonstop with its coverage of the Malaysian Airlines flight, the missing flight 370, in which speculation and conjecture dominated the newscast, the network went full throttle on the missing airplane story, and the result was a big bump in ratings for the coveted 25 to 54-year-old audience. But there was lots of speculation in its coverage, and we're going to talk about some of the criticism that CNN has taken for its coverage of Flight 370 today on Midday on Media with David Zerwick. We're also going to take a look at Kevin Spacey's visit to Annapolis and the lawmakers there, the future of House of Cards, as production of House of Cards here in Maryland. And I want to talk to you, David, a little bit about a Hunt Valley-based Sinclair Broadcasting Group, which is continuing to expand and trying to adjust to possible rules change at the Federal Communications Commission. Anyway, it's good to see you, David.
It's good to be here.
You got a chance to talk to Josh Charles after this thing that happened on The Good Wife Sunday night. He went on David Letterman, but he also you had a chance to talk to him. So here's a guy, he establishes a role in a popular television show. Then the character shockingly, is killed off. That's your exit from the show. And there was all this fan reaction that, I don't know, you might have expected, maybe not, because it is, after all, a TV show. Tell us what Josh had to say about this.
Well, you know, he was. I've known him long enough. I absolutely do not believe he was being disingenuous. He was surprised, and he said a little overwhelmed by the fan reaction to this death. He said he didn't know. Of course, he didn't know what to expect, but he did not expect the kind of intensity. And here's what was really interesting to me about this: most television actors don't really get a direct expression of how much fans like their work, because you tape it and then you record it, you film it, and then it airs 6 months, 8 months, 10 months, the year later, and you're in Europe, you don't know what, blah blah blah. Here you get to see how much your fans loved that character because of this outpouring. So I was fascinated by Charles being one of the few actors in that position whose character is killed off, who gets to sort of live through this thing.
Right.
So, of course, it happened Sunday night, or it aired Sunday night. Monday, you think it's a long shot. But I emailed Josh, and he got back to me about 9:30, 10:30. He said, hey, what about tonight? What about tomorrow? I said, whenever. So just before Letterman, I was going to watch him on Letterman and write about it for the blog, because Letterman's publicist had sent me a transcript, and we already had something up about 8 o'clock that night, but we were going to update it with what he said. So he calls. So I'm watching him on,
Letterman.
I'm talking.
He's explaining to Letterman, and then he's talking to you. Talking, but you got more out of him than Letterman did.
Yeah, he was.
You had some good stuff there. He talked about a one woman whose mother was so upset.
Yes.
By the death of Will on The Good Wife, that he actually made a phone call.
Yeah, that was fascinating to me. As you know, I mean, and as a lot of people in Baltimore know, Josh Charles is really active on Twitter, on Raven Sundays. Oh, he's all over the place.
He's retweeted a couple of mine.
Has he?
That's pretty cool. Yeah,
It is nice. You know, I'm guessing Monday you'll be seeing Josh Charles in an Orioles hat on at Camden Yard.
I'm guessing we will.
And that's great. It is great.
Can I say something about him? I have this impression he seems like a modest guy to me.
He is.
And I think he's very talented. I've enjoyed him ever since, Dead Poets Society, a film with Robin Williams, and that show that was on about sports, about ESPN.
Sports Night. Aaron Sorkin show.
Very good, very good. But I have an impression he's a modest guy, and he likes Baltimore. He's a homeboy. He comes home, and he pays attention to what goes on in Baltimore. Those are my impressions.
You know, nobody's more cynical about people in show business than I am, because most of them are really lousy human beings. You will cut your throat, and now I sound like Dick Nixon. They'll cut your throat in a minute.
Is that your Dick Nixon imitation?
No, but it's Dick's mentality.
That's
I know.
That's a really good Nixon.
I know. I'm as paranoid.
Mine goes like this.
I'm as paranoid.
Let me say
as
this
Dick.
About that.
Anyway, that said,
I'm not a crook. I'm sorry.
My sense of Charles, given all that cynicism, is that he is the Baltimore stuff is absolutely sincere with him, and he is sincerely a nice guy. Don't forget. I mean, people think of him as being an outstanding actor, a kind of character actor, a guy who can do theater at the highest levels and do it well. It's not just that he's a good-looking sort of leading man, but he also is, by the definitions of the television industry, a leading man. And that's like being an anchor man in the old days. People kiss your butt 24 hours a day because you're a valuable commodity. You can build a show around it.
Did he have that kind of stature from The Good Wife?
He played, Juliana Margulies. It's her show, but he was right there next to her, and there was outstanding talent. I mean, that was a deep ensemble, and he was right there. So I think it's fair to say if there was a leading man, it was him in that show.
Okay.
He has none of the sort of affectations of other people vastly less talented than him, who have that kind of stature in show business. He came back and did a photo shoot for a cover of a Baltimore Sun magazine when we were just launching the magazine. And it was a nice thing for him to do it. I'm sure he wouldn't have done it if his publicist didn't think it was worth his while. But I'm telling you, I spent the day with him because he knew me. He didn't know the people on the magazine, and they sort of wanted me over there to be an intermediary. And, you know, people were saying, oh, stand over here, put this T-shirt on, here's some more makeup, do this. And I was kind of like, hey, this guy's a star. Let's say, would you please consider putting this T-shirt on? That's the way it's done on the sound stages in Hollywood, guys. But he didn't. He didn't show any attitude, any pose. It's funny because when I did the thing late Monday, I wrote this thing about 1:30 Tuesday morning, and I went into Merlin, our archive of photos, trying to find a photo for the blog post, and I found all these photos from the photo shoot, and where he's standing along the Washington Monument and all that stuff, and I realized how nice and how patient and how long he went around. And I'll tell you, we were standing out there in the middle of Mount Vernon in front of that thing, and people were coming up to him like, you know, oh, I'm walking my dog. Hey, I think I know you. Are you on a show or something? I mean, and he was so nice to those people.
Can I tell you my funny Josh Charles stories? I have one of those columns where I write one-liners, quips.
Yeah,
I don't do them very often, but I had some quip about Josh Charles, but it was complimentary, and I don't even remember what I said. So his aunt in Pikesville or somewhere reads it, calls him in New York, draws his attention to one line in my column in The Sun, and then he calls me to thank me for doing that. Yes. Now, who does that? And what you think a big star like that, what does he even care anymore about what one line about him in the Baltimore Sun says?
Yeah.
But he did it. And then we had him on the show here talking about the Ravens and the Super Bowl. He's a pretty cool guy. Here's what Josh Charles had to say about what happened to him on The Good Wife. He was on David Letterman Monday night. David Zerowick got to speak to him as well. But here's a little clip from Josh Charles' appearance on The Letterman Show.
What the hell happened?
What an intro.
You got killed off.
It's what you got to do to get on the Letterman show. I had to do that. Yeah. I had to get killed off to be on your show.
You knew this was going to happen?
Yeah, we've known this since last year. Mm-hmm. It's been one of the greatest gigs for me in my entire career, but at the end of last year, my contract was up, and I was just ready to kind of move on. And
that's a very courageous thing to do.
In
show business.
It might be. Yeah, I guess it is. It is tough to leave stability and leave sort of structure.
But moves like this always pay off. I think they're always for the better.
Well, I can just tell you that I think what we decided last year was to come back and do these 15 this year, which I think really was great for the show and also as a really proper goodbye to the character. And so that was special.
What has been their reaction, fans, friends, family to this?
Yeah.
It was all secretive, right? You couldn't tell anybody?
It is kind of amazing. We've been able to keep it a secret for an entire year. So that's, yeah, I told some family members that I know could keep a secret, which is a very few.
Yeah.
Including his aunt in Pikesville. But, you know, that is kind of impressive, isn't it?
I am amazed. I am amazed that they did it for a year.
Here's an email from Marilyn, one of our listeners on The Good Wife. She says, I cried uncontrollably. I love Will, and I love Will and Alicia together. I'm so upset with the writers. Will's character cannot be replaced.
You know, that's true, and it's interesting because Josh is also one of the only actors I've talked to who's sensitive to that. He said, I understand how fans feel. That's what he said. He said he had a lot of people, you know, he talks to people on Twitter, and one of his followers, he said, a young woman, wrote to him that her mother was just devastated by his death on Sunday night and went to bed really kind of distraught about it. And he got the phone number from her and called the woman's mother up and talked to her, said we had a nice time. That's really, I mean, that really is. And you know what? I believe this relationship we have with characters, dance, you know, honestly, people who are not crazy, like, sociologists, some of them are pretty crazy. But anyway, this one isn't crazy. He wrote a book, John Coey at the University of Maryland, called Imaginary Social Worlds. And he said, he claims, and he did this through ethnographic interviewing, that the relationships we have with some of these fictional characters are more intense, more personal, deeper and richer than relationships we have with some family members. And I believe that's true. I really respect the relationship people have with them. You know, when Brody died, somebody's going to call in now and say, Zerwick, that's a spoiler, but Homeland's been over for months. When Brody died on Homeland this year.
Brody died? Sorry, I missed. I lost track.
Spoiler alert! It blew me away. I'm telling you, I was like rattled. I was depressed. It was existential. It was cosmic. I didn't think it was going to happen. I thought, oh, they're just pulling him up. He's going to be fine.
Who was the, in MASH, who was the original camp commander?
Potter.
He came afterwards. Who was the original? Who was the original one? And he left.
Played by McLean Stevenson.
Yeah. Who was that? What was his name?
That I can't tell you.
Colonel something?
It was played by McLean Stevenson. I remember the death. It was huge. Yes, yes.
And they're all in surgery. They're performing surgery. And the word comes back that he died. His plane went down.
Yeah.
Because he was just leaving, right? He was all excited about finally going home or going at least to Japan or something. Yeah. And I remember, wow, that one got to me.
We were careful.
McLean Stevenson.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, I
can't remember the character's name. How come I can't remember the character's
name?
Somebody
will call in. Someone
will call in.
And they better, yes.
410-662-8780. We're too lazy to Google it here, so
please give
us a ring.
No, I want to hear what
410.
Some people will remember it. They'll remember how they reacted to it.
But I'm trying to think of another character. Was there another?
Well, look at all the Sopranos. We had those deaths too. Remember that?
Did we feel sorry about those?
I did. Yeah. But I'm telling you, the Brody thing. I was shocked at how rattled I was by it. It was like cosmic, and I'm going, "Come on, I'm immune to this stuff. I've been doing this for a long time, but it's real. You connect with these characters. You're invested in them, and your world is diminished when they're gone."
Colonel Henry Blake.
Henry Blake.
Remember the news coming that Colonel Blake hadn't made it?
I think
Radar O'Reilly was the one who reported the death, right?
And it was the first big one I know, the first one we discussed. Media historians say that was the first one. I'm trying to think if there was one before that where we dealt with it in that way. But isn't it interesting how much more innocent TV was and how much less sort of it was willing to mess with our psychic life?
Right.
You know what I'm
right.
saying?
David Zerwick's here at Midday on Media. If you were surprised by the death of the character Will, played by Josh Charles in The Good Wife on CBS, please give us a ring, 410-662-8780. We got some other subjects to cover this hour of Midday on Media, including CNN's coverage of Malaysian Airlines Flight 370. It's come under some fire by some in the news industry, not only for going nonstop with its coverage, but engaging in lots of speculation and conjecture. We'll talk about that when we get back with David. Hey, let's take this call from Tracy in Aberdeen, who's reminding us about another TV death that affected him.
Sounds good.
TV character death. Tracy, go right ahead. Which one do you have in mind?
It was Lucy from ER. It might have been 15 years ago.
Lucy, the medical student, the blonde medical student?
Yes, when the guy came and I don't know if he stabbed her or shot her, but I just remember sitting there watching it, and I was so emotionally broken down. I never felt anything like that from a TV show. And
wow. I don't remember that's what happened to her. I do remember the character. Now I'm looking at a picture of her.
She died, and she died in surgery. And it was one of those things, like, there's no way they're going to kill Lucy off. You know, she's young, she's vibrant, and she died. And it was like, oh, man, you know, broke everybody down.
Wow.
Tracy, isn't
that was my comment.
Yeah. You know, isn't that fascinating, the way we actually go through those stages? I did that, too, with some of these, where the first stage is denial. You know, when they're like laying there, or you think, oh, they're going to get up, or it's a dream. It's not really happening.
Right.
And we go actually through
this. Folks might have had that reaction to Josh Charles' character's death,
some
right?
People
because
did.
It was a courtroom scene,
yep.
And so there's this gunfire, right?
Yep. And I had emails from people saying, well, he's, you know, they thought he was not going to die. They thought he was going to be whisked away, you know, or they were somehow going to revive him. They did not think it's going to happen. But it's interesting that we go through that actual thing of denial, because it's exactly what I did when Brody was being executed.
Now, did you know Brody's execution was coming?
No.
As a TV critic.
No.
You didn't know.
No.
But there's been other cases where we know someone's contract has run out and that this is their last season.
Yeah.
They're going to be leaving the show.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was the case with Colonel Henry Blake, played by McLean Stevenson, or not, or whether it was a surprise that he was lost after he left MASH.
It's fascinating from the 70s, because I've been covering TV from the 70s, how much more naive we were about the industry, about the connections between...
Less cynical.
Yes, yeah.
Pat in Annapolis wanted to say something about The Good Wife. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, Pat, what'd you have on your mind?
Well, you know, I didn't watch the show, but I know how traumatic it is because I watched Game of Thrones, and they continue to kill off all of the favorite characters, and it's traumatic.
Why do they keep doing that?
Well, R. Martin wrote this book, and you know, all men must die, and your favorite characters, one after another, are just lopped off, and it's hard to go to sleep at night after your best character has been killed.
Really?
Pat, how did you react to the wedding slaughter last year? I remember...
Shocked.
Huh?
I was shocked.
I remember I wound up writing about that because some people were so devastated by it, and it really was an unbelievable. I mean, they upped the ante, don't they, on Game of Thrones?
They did. Yeah. They did. So I'm wondering now if other shows are going to take their cue from Game of Thrones and throw that in here and there, because the press and the publicity it got was unbelievable.
Yeah, but then you don't have the character anymore.
Well,
I know,
right?
It's sad.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can watch it this season. I'm so upset.
Well, they'll find a way on Game of Thrones to keep us watching. But, you know, I think part of it is that people do have to be careful with that, producers and writers. If you don't do it right, especially now, especially after Game of Thrones, that's really a great point, Pat, that you bring that one up. There'll be a backlash. If you do a gratuitous killing now in one of these shows and it's not done well and it looks like it's obviously done for ratings, the press is going to eat you up as bad as they built you up before. That's fascinating. And I think Game of Thrones might have been a trigger point for that.
Let's take another call about The Good Wife. This is LaWanda in Annapolis. Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
I was calling because I do watch the show. I've been watching from the beginning. And I think there's a little bit difference between this show and you guys were talking about Game of Thrones, maybe comparing network to cable. You just haven't seen anything like what happened. I mean, I was totally stunned, and I'm usually pretty good at picking those things out. And I was really surprised. It's a great show. It's very well written. It's very well acted and produced, and I think they pulled it off very well.
So that really surprised you. You didn't expect that plot twist.
I didn't
expect
it at all.
Yeah.
And I think you're, I think you're right, LaWanda, about the difference between cable and network. Cable does go for more sort of emotional knockout, almost over-the-top situations in a way network won't. But the quality dramas on network TV, like The Good Wife, have done some of this. I remember, you know, deaths on NYPD Blue. I remember a death on Homicide when I can't remember what the title of the episode is. I still have it sitting in my desk because Andre Brower, character Pembleton, was dressed in his dress uniform, standing at Recreation Pier.
I remember that.
Building,
yeah, I remember
saluting
that.
And it's one of the most powerful symbols. I want to say that it was the John Polito character, the little short, bald guy who died.
Yeah.
I think that's the character. But so they have dealt with it in shows, and they have dealt with it, you know, especially in crime shows, with a sudden kind of violent death like that. Well, the one we heard about in ER just now was the same way in a way. But you're right. There is a difference. It's more prevalent on cable.
Hey, do you remember Coach from Cheers?
Oh, God, yes. Yes.
Played by Nicholas Colasanto. The character was Ernie Pantuso. Pantuso,
yeah.
Coach?
Yep.
Now, he died, but not on the show. He just...
The actor was
sick.
The
actor died.
Yeah, that was my recollection.
And he was just sort of written out of the as I think they made a reference to him having died. I don't think there was much fuss made about it.
I don't know. I don't remember, but I do know that it was as a result of the actor's illness. It wasn't that they decided to get rid of the character.
And that's happened other times too. Ed, we'll take one more call on this. Ed, how you doing?
Good. We're still mourning the death of Matthew at the end of last season of Downton Abbey.
Oh, yeah. And Lady Mary was mourning it till she met another man and stopped mourning. I'm kidding. It's right. It is. It was really devastating.
Did Thomas Magnum from Magnum P.I. die? Is that how they ended that series? This is an email from Brian who says, when Thomas Magnum from Magnum P.I. died, I was really upset. Do you remember? Was that the guy played by Selleck?
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Was he Thomas or was his father Thomas?
Oh, you know, we're going to have to. Somebody's going to have to.
Was his father in the show? Will you guys do some research in the control room instead of just handing me these things?
Yeah, don't
act like Z and I know all this stuff.
What do you think? The TV critic who's been doing this for 30 years is actually going to have the answers?
Well, how would you even retain? How would you remember that?
You know what?
Do you think was there a Magnum father character on Magnum P.I.? I don't think so.
This is what my mind is filled with, unfortunately. Yeah. But even my mind can't retain.
That guy did things he did not want his father around. There was no daddy Magnum on Magnum P.I.
I was going to say, doesn't he still have a show? He's doing fine, I think. He just does movies.
I'm going to air. We're going to listen now to a clip from Wolf Blitzer, a man who I respect a great deal, from the coverage in the Situation Room on CNN. Wolf Blitzer talking about their coverage, the latest story on the missing Malaysian Airlines flight.
A chilling new theory is emerging as investigators search the southern Indian Ocean right now. Could deadly battery fumes or an oxygen shortage have actually turned Flight 370 into what some are calling a zombie plane?
A zombie plane. Now let's talk about this a little bit, because I followed this story online in the New York Times and in the Baltimore Sun. I did not watch TV coverage of this at all. So help fill me in here. What's been going on with CNN? They just went wall to wall crazy with this, or what?
Crazy is the word. CNN has been really struggling now for about 15, 16 months under Jeff Zucker's new leadership. He was going to turn it around. He put on shows like Crossfire that's already off the air without announcing it's off the air.
Oh, is it gone?
Well, he pulled it. He pulled it, and it just disappeared. You know, and Stephanie Cutter's gone, and it's just...
Really?
You know, and yet,
this all happened in the last week or so.
Dan, when
they need to make room for Malaysian Airlines
flight
coverage.
Well, that's part of it. But, you know, when I attacked that show, They had executives from CNN call me up saying, no, Zerwick, this is a hit. You're wrong. You got to print a correction.
That was a bad show.
Yes, it was an
that
awful
show. It was an unwatchable show.
It was an awful
was the,
show.
And what about, is this the one with Newt Gingrich, too?
This is the one with Newt Gingrich.
Oh, my God. That show was so bad. It was the woman next to the Rachel Maddow wannabe next to Newt Gingrich.
Now, there's a new person they brought in. Stephanie Cutter's no
I thought you said they
there.
Cut the show.
They brought her in about three weeks ago, and then the show's been off the air for the last 2 weeks. And they won't make an announcement on what's going on. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
What's in its place? Do you know?
They're running longer Wolf Blitzer. Which is the time.
Wolf is on like 24/7 practically.
But, and that's the time they took away to make the show. Now it's back to him. This is when you know leadership doesn't really have a plan, Dan. But this is sad about CNN because they got a ratings they caught a ratings hit wave with the Malaysian Airlines story, and instead of saying okay, let's, you know, everybody wants ratings, everybody wants viewers, how can we do this intelligently? Well, how can we do this in a journalistically respectable way? No, they didn't do it. They just went wall to wall, and because there was. In a way, this story was the opposite of journalism. Journalism is about gathering information, confirming that, verifying that information, and sharing it with the public. There was no information. So what they shared with the public was crazy stuff.
Speculative stuff.
Listen, honest to God, I get about how hard it is to be viable, commercially viable, journalistically sound in the media. And everybody who says, no, they don't worry about it, is a liar. We do worry about it. But I'm the anchor, Wolf Blitzer, and they hand me a piece of paper, and it says, let's call it the zombie plane now. I'm like, no, guys, right. This is where you're...
Well, this tests the whole model of cable news, doesn't it, with a big story that's a mystery, right?
Yes.
How do you feed the monster, meaning keep the content coming... when you're dealing with a mystery wrapped inside an enigma surrounded by a cloak of I already said mystery.
Well, they just sat there.
What do you say?
They just sat there and they kept speculation. They kept bringing people on wilder and wilder theories. And then when they ran out of that, they started reading some of the crazier stuff that they got in social media. One of them, there was a tweet that said, Don Lemon read this, you know, and it's the new version. You can use social media the way we used to use it when Diane Sawyer would say, you know, some people believe you're a mass murderer, Dick Nixon.
Right.
But, you know.
Because you saw it on Twitter.
But it's not me. So now they say, you know, somebody, one of our viewers here says on Twitter that you're a mass murderer. So he said, well, look, you know, we've got this tweet here that, you know, some of these are theories, but what do you say about that the plane flew into a black hole.
Here we go. This is Don Lemon, CNN's Don Lemon, asking. This was Mary Schiavo, who is the former Inspector General for the U.S. Department of Transportation, and he's asking her about these various conspiracy theories.
This is great.
What if it was hijacking or terrorism or mechanical failure or pilot error, but what if it was something fully that we don't really understand? A lot of people have been asking about that, about black holes and on and on and on and all of these conspiracy theories. Let's look at this. Noah says, what else can you think about? Black hole, Bermuda Triangle. And then Deji says, huh, just like the movie Lost. And of course, it's also, they're also referencing the Twilight Zone, which has a very similar plot. That's what people are saying. I know it's preposterous, but is it preposterous, you think, Mary?
Well, it is. A black hole is about, you know, a small black hole would suck in our entire universe. So we know it's not that. Bermuda Triangle is often weather. And Lost is a TV show. So
right.
I think I always like things for which there's data, history, crunch the numbers. So for me, those aren't there. But I think it's wonderful that the whole world is trying to help with their theories. And I absolutely love the theories.
That is a classic answer of
she
a guest.
She was great. She's being very nice.
Thank you for your That's a classic answer of a guest. You don't want to tell the host on cable TV, and honest to God, I've sat there, that is moronic. You can't say that or you're never coming back. So,
excuse me. Do you think, like, some producer is up in the control room and he's got his IFB on and he's listening and they ask her about black hole?
Oh, yeah.
Ask her about black hole.
Of course.
Ask her about UFOs. Ask her about the Bermuda Triangle.
Of course.
Right?
There's no doubt about
it. You don't think
it.
Don Lemon actually wanted to ask those questions?
I don't know. I've seen Don Lemon ask some pretty crazy stuff. I got to say
that's
about Don Lemon. And Don Lemon's trying out under Jeff Zucker's thing. Jeff Zucker is trying to find a spot for him as a regular host. They think he might get him some ratings. That's how desperate they are. Look, when you're in that situation, you know, anything that moves the needle, anything that moves the needle, and Bermuda Triangle, Black Hole. I love the answer. She said, no, Lost is a TV show. But to even, and by the way, Don, sorry, if it had flown into a black hole, we wouldn't be here to suck the whole universe. You moron.
We'd be on the other side of something. Right? We'd be on the other side of the universe.
We'd be in the bizarro planet where CNN is a success.
Let's take a call from Pikesville. I brought up Pikesville again. This is Tom. I don't think he's related to Josh Charles, but I'll ask.
Okay.
Tom, how you doing?
Good afternoon. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, great. Go right ahead, Tom.
Well, thank you. I teach a couple of courses for a local university, and I'm not going to advertise or anything like that. But as part of my class discussion, I ask students to try to assimilate the lessons that we're trying to learn in these business courses with something that's going on in the news. And I always used to ask them about CNN. You know, you can watch it. It's a good broad coverage of everything that's going on. And now I have to qualify anything that comes from CNN with, you've got to back that up with something substantiated from another network or another media source, because it has become the equivalent. I look at it as the equivalent of perhaps National Enquirer for TV. It's become a sensationalized media source that looks just for the pop factor.
Yeah, I'm glad Tom brought that up because all kidding aside, let's go back to some basics here, David. When we talk about the iron core of center of the universe of news, you have, foundationally the wire services, important newspapers, daily newspapers, New York Times, Washington Post, L.A. Times, and then in metropolitan areas, daily newspapers that still produce news.
Right.
And then you have NPR, I would say.
Right.
And then you have the network radio, CBS, what remains of that, right? And then you get to local, regional radio newscasts. And then you get to, in television, in the Iron Core, you have still the network news operations that we count on. And on cable, it was CNN. I wouldn't go much past that if I was describing the Iron Core of news. Other people would say Fox News, and I would put that out on the ring of the universe, not at the center
right.
of it.
I agree.
But even though it has a lot of ratings, right? So you've got to count on CNN in that regard. You came to count on it because of the original model of it and what it became over the years, its reputation and what it delivered, especially through our wars, the first Persian Gulf War, the Iraq War, through some big national stories, elections and all of it, right?
Dan,
and now we get to this. So what's going on?
Is it
reflective of the audience that people don't want serious news on TV? I mean, what is it?
No, this is profound, honestly. I mean, we were kidding around, but what he brought up is a profound point, and you nailed exactly what I was thinking of as he was saying it. Look, what we have lost, and you know this, I have been for the last 5-6 years been calling CNN our last best hope for a cable news operation that is about trustworthy information. And I believe that it has abrogated that responsibility. It is no longer that we do not have a 24-hour cable news source that we can trust for reliable information. People want it, Dan. People still want it.
So I get to the why, and you say people want it,
yes.
And I'm questioning if people want it from or expect it from television.
People want it. Otherwise, CNN's ratings wouldn't have gone up so dramatically as they did during something like Flight 370 thing.
Whenever, so they did get good ratings.
They got excellent ratings. That's why they went nuts. They wanted more. It was catnip. They couldn't give it up. But also
they're offering this all this speculative fill the space stuff, right?
Exactly. People. This is what kills me when these guys from CNN would call me up and say, Zerwick, you know, don't lose faith. We're doing no. They had such a successful brand, just as you said. created by Ted Turner and Tom Johnson and those folks who went to Iran, Peter Arnett and those, as controversial as he was, the people who sat there when bombs were falling in Iraq and reported back to the nation.
Wolf Blitzer.
Yes, the only coverage we had. That was real journalism. They did it. That established their brands so profoundly. And for the last decades, we've had wannabe executives at CNN shredding it. And now we got a guy who has no idea what that brand
is.
Why
are they shredding it? Are they just tinkering with
it? It's not enough anymore. You know what it is, Dan? Everybody in commercial media, and this is a reasonable expectation. This is the way Hollywood works. The reason there's such tension between creativity, the reason we have this narrative of great creative artists like the great novelists of the 30s going out to Hollywood as screenwriters and getting chewed up and spit on and they all, F. Scott Fitzgerald, blah, 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 is because the American commercial entertainment industries don't want creativity. They want productivity and they want it in a rational way where you can package it, you know, and you can't package creativity. You know, one day the author shows up and she or he doesn't have any thoughts and they just sit there at their desk and they go, get rid of that person. That's not the way you do it. And so
what are you saying? You mean you want to package something before it's even created?
You want to be able to control those ratings in a steady way.
Okay.
CNN is now at the mercy of news cycles, which should be good enough for a news channel to be the place people go. But it's not. The down periods, the board of Time Warner is upset with them and wants Zucker to get ratings all the way through. So you start creating artificial shows like Crossfire, which is an artificial debate, when there's not a real debate going on in Congress or wherever at that time that people care about.
Well, excuse me. They achieved something with Anderson Cooper at 360, no?
Cooper is, you know what, Cooper,
I think he's pretty steady.
Cooper is pretty steady, but he's consistently third in his time period. He's not competitive.
I don't want to just settle for that. What do you think of the quality of what he delivers?
Anderson Cooper, I was one of his biggest fans. And when Anderson Cooper focuses and goes out and covers a story like Katrina, he's outstanding. Because not only is he a pretty good reporter, he's an outstanding communicator in that medium.
Yeah.
He's remarkable. Here's my criticism of Anderson Cooper, and I know it because I was one of the guys who backed him to the hilt and was his champion. Anderson Cooper, in a way, is kind of a frivolous guy who is just as happy with Kathy Griffin on New Year's Eve as he is covering Katrina. He's not a very serious guy. And he's...
Okay, he leans more toward one than the other.
And, but he's also, Dan, gone showbiz in a way that a serious journalist shouldn't. He did that daytime talk show. He does the 60. He does all this different stuff, and he did none of them well. The daytime talk show got canceled. If you give me 8 or 9 o'clock on CNN and say, Zerwick, our primetime depends on this. You're the tentpole, man. You carry us. I don't go get 6 other jobs on other channels and do a daytime happy talk show.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
He betrayed him in a way, I think.
I thought he was leaning more toward the serious these days.
He is. I agree with you.
So they do have that.
Yeah.
And they have Wolf.
Yeah.
And I guess that's not enough for them.
It's not enough for them. I'll tell you, I mean, sad to say, you know who's got the right, the model that the commercial industry likes is Fox. It's all manufactured.
Yeah.
You know, you create this Bill O'Reilly character, you know, who's, and it's a character, and it's all shtick every night.
Mm-hmm.
And then they create a Megyn Kelly. Oh, we need slightly younger demographics, and we need a type. And, you know, and then we're going to put her in front of, like, Manhattan, like she's Walter Winchell, except she's beautiful and Walter Winchell wasn't beautiful. And you're at the center of what's happening in the world listening to this woman.
So that works because it expresses an ideology, too.
Well, the ideology is...
And you want CNN. We want CNN to be right down the middle. We want it to be objective, right?
The ideology is a big, big part of what's going on with both of those channels. But ideology, Dan, I would argue, is not enough because you see how poorly MSNBC does at certain daytime parts.
That ideology doesn't.
Ideology.
I mean, isn't that true? I mean, the conservative ideology is winning over there at Fox.
Yes.
The left-leaning ideology is not winning. It may go off the air. May completely fail.
Well,
may collapse.
I would argue.
No.
I would argue.
Isn't that what's going on?
I would argue you need ideology, you need personality, and you need a formula. And Rachel Maddow actually does all three of those things, which is why she's successful on MSNBC.
David Zerwick here. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oberman was too, strangely
enough. Yeah, I know.
Enough.
I kind of miss him, right? Yeah. We're going to take a break here. We'll get back some more Midday on Media with David Zerwick. You're welcome to give us a call and weigh in on any of these subjects we've already covered. But also, coming up a little bit more on House of Cards, Kevin Spacey, will we see House of Cards produced here in Maryland? Continue to be produced here in Maryland, and also produced here in Maryland, Sinclair Broadcasting, a growing company out in Hunt Valley. A little bit of that from David Zerwick, and also we got a new season of Mad Men coming up. 410-662-8780 is the number for Midday. We'll be right back. We have such smart callers. Gloria is calling from Davidsonville to ask you a question that I was going to ask you before the break, but I forgot to ask you. So Gloria is going to bring it up. Hello, Gloria.
Hi. My question is, what happened to you and Al Jazeera? They're really good.
Yeah.
And when something happens in the world, here or God knows where, first thing I do is turn on Al Jazeera.
Gloria, I would ask you kindly to do a Google search of Al Jazeera and Zerwick. I have been their champion. I have said,
oh yeah,
I have championed Al Jazeera for years, but most specifically since they did a documentary on Baltimore that was just, I thought was fabulous, and we couldn't see it here because at the time we didn't have Al Jazeera America. I wrote a Sunday column in the Sun 2 weeks ago about Al Jazeera America and a documentary they have. I agree with you. And you know what, Gloria? We don't even have to make the argument that Al Jazeera is better than everybody else. Al Jazeera should be on the menu of American media just for the matter of diversity. And the fact that the giant companies like Time Warner, which owns CNN, the fact that they made such a strong effort to keep it off American television and played this card that it was a terrorist channel and all this stuff, really upset me. I mean, it's really how far we've gotten away from understanding what our journalistic needs are as a democracy and how far we've let people who have an ideological bent sway us one way or the other. So I'm totally with you, Gloria. Yes, Al Jazeera, check it out. Its ratings are really suffering. I hope people will turn it on. On the other hand, I'm not going to say, oh, its ratings are suffering. If you don't watch, it's going to go away. It's funded by it's foreign.
Deep pockets.
Yeah, deep pockets. It'll stay on as long as it needs to.
But it's
to.
Good. And they've done some reporting out of Baltimore, too.
Yes.
Some excellent stories that I've read online.
Yes.
I haven't seen them online, but you can read the content online.
They like Baltimore because, they have a strong base in Washington. Adam May from Channel 13 is down there, and he's an excellent reporter, for one. And two, Al Jazeera, when people talk about its bias, it's not towards terrorism or anything. They do have a bias towards countries and peoples who were the product of, they call it Global South. It's the countries below the equator, south of the equator, who were dominated by European colonialism. Well, in Baltimore, in America, that translates to cities like Baltimore, where there's populations that they feel were disadvantaged in certain ways.
Marginalized,
yes,
undeserved.
Marginalized, perfect, thank you. And they like to tell their stories, and I think that's a good thing.
Tom is in Hamden. You're on Midday. Next, Tom, with David Zerwick. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you want to say?
Listen, I think your criticism, I share a lot of it of CNN's current coverage, but I think your criticism overall of what's happening there is burdened by this kind of mistake they're making by covering 370 wall to wall. Don't forget, you've got Michelle Kaczynski, who's come on. Her reporting from the White House and on Obama is really excellent. You've got terrific reporters in the field, even on the 370 issue. You've got people who are in Australia knowledgeable, people in Singapore, Kuala Lumpur knowledgeable. You've got David McKenzie in Beijing. Granted, they're having to play this awful game of stretch, stretch, repeat, repeat. But they've been able to line up a tremendous a group of people and have access still, even though it's on this tragic story. You've got in the morning now Andrew Cuomo and Kate Baldwin. That's a very fine morning news program. And it just sort of, you know, is a nice offset to MSNBC's ghastly morning Joe. The Sunday lineup of shows is really coming on strong. You've got Fareed Zakaria. I think something is happening there. I'm finding myself, as you were once, never wanting to watch it. I'm finding myself actually spending more time looking
pulled back into CNN.
Tom, I have to tell you, you probably know, or maybe you don't, that I've been on CNN Sunday mornings a lot the last 8 years or so. I was a regular on the media show there, Reliable Sources. I know a lot about that morning show, and I know a lot about their foreign reporters. They have outstanding international coverage, but that's CNN International, and they're having a hard time getting resources and getting time on American television since Jeff Zucker's taken over there. I agree that they, you know, I've sat there in the green room with some of their foreign correspondents who are back in the States and they're on the media shows with me or on one of the other shows. I have tremendous respect for them. I would disagree with you about the morning show. I would rather watch Charlie Rose on CBS if I have to pick a morning show.
David, season three of Netflix's House of Cards has been pushed off until June. They were supposed to start filming this spring. They want more money from the state of Maryland. Kevin Spacey was down there whining with the, I don't know if he was dining, but he was certainly at a wine bar with the legislators in Annapolis last Friday. What's the status of all that? What do you think's going to happen there?
Dan, as you know, since the time they talked about coming here, I think I've written 10 million stories on this and 10 million stories on film incentives. And I know exactly where I stand on film incentives. I'm very clear about it. I really like the fact. I think it's important that we have the kind of production we now have in this state. I will tell you what, MRC, the production company, who I have worked to have a good relationship with, went too far on this one, I think. And people in this community, in the film industry in this community, have lied to me flat out on MRC's behalf about what's going on, trying to play the game. Here's what I don't like. I think they have contempt for us. They think we're a bunch of rubes in this state, and the guys out in Hollywood who run that company are treating us that way. And that's not the way to treat us, because we've been doing this a long time with better shows. As much as I like that show, I'll take the wire over that show any day, number one. So I have some issues with them right now.
They want $15 million.
Listen, people are saying they're tearing the sets down out there.
In Harford County?
BS. BS, they're tearing sets down. I'll tell you. You know what?
I didn't light their pants on fire
before they'd throw away that kind of money out there, turning down. So, listen, this is, listen, you know what I know? Here's where I'm sticking. I have tremendous respect for Kevin Spacey. I love him. Spacey has treated this community really well, and he's the reason that show's a success. Not the writing, not anything else. He's a major star that's carrying that show. Kevin Spacey told me in New York a couple, whatever it was, 2 months ago, we're coming back to Baltimore. Now, that doesn't mean they're definitely coming back to Baltimore, but that means there's a better chance that they'll be coming back than not coming back. But, boy, I'll tell you, they have handled this. They think they're so slick. They have handled this horribly, the production company.
So it's not clear what's going to happen in Annapolis in terms of that money.
Is it ever clear what's going to happen in Annapolis?
Well, we're getting to the deadline here.
No, I'm joking about it. Listen.
I mean, we're coming up on sine die in early April. So.
Even if they don't get the money they want, I don't know that that means they move, because once you build the kind of production facility out there that they built, that's a big thing.
Yeah.
But if I get one more person call me up and tell me they're tearing down sets out there, next time you call me up and tell me that, folks, send me the video.
Send
I want to see it.
Yeah, send a picture. David Zerwick, the media critic of the Baltimore Sun, Z on TV is his blog. You can find him at baltimoresun.com or pick up a print edition of the paper sometime. His stuff appears in that too, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Remember
every Sunday. Sunday column every day. I try to get something in if I can.
We didn't get to Sinclair Broadcasting, but we will next time.
Yes, another guy's pushing it, going overboard. Yep.
All right. David, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And
this was great.
Everybody, have a great afternoon, and we'll see you again tomorrow for another edition of Midday.
Midday's senior producer is Nikki Gamer. The producer and director is Jonathan Ahrens. The associate producer, Michael Himowitz. Our interns are Luke Spicknell, James Daly, Tom Cartaxo, and Michelle Richardson. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming available at WYPR.org. Dan Roderick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.